Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Sarah Gulseth. We have some very exciting things to talk about today. Two of my favorite things, actually, music and missionaries. Stay tuned for those conversations. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for their support of Faith and Family. To find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin, you can go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining me by phone this morning, it is my pleasure to have Dr. Kurt von Kampen, professor of music, chair of the music department, and director of choral activities for Concordia University, Nebraska, to talk a little bit about the a cappella choir and their upcoming tour next week to South Africa. Welcome, Dr. von Kampen.
Thank you very much, Sarah. It's great to be with you.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you on the program. I'm a big fan of music and choral singing and international tours. This is really exciting. Tell me and, a bit of. I'm sorry.
You're sure it's okay to have a Concordia, Nebraska guy on a Wisconsin sponsored program?
Yeah, that's well, and I'm a Concordia Chicago grad, so we'll let it go for today.
We got it all covered then. Yeah.
Yes. Tell me a bit about your background and your journey to Concordia, Nebraska.
I did my undergraduate studies at Concordia, Nebraska, and got a music education degree, and then I went back to my stomping grounds. I grew up in Michigan in the Detroit suburbs and went back and taught in Lutheran high schools for about 10 years in Detroit area, and then was called to Concordia in Ann Arbor and taught for 5 years there, and always sort of had in the back of my mind that I hope the Lord would lead me to Concordia Seward, Nebraska someday. Since I graduated from here, and I just have a special place in my heart for this this institution. And after 5 years at Ann Arbor, there was an opening at Concordia Seward, and the Lord made it happen. So I've been here since the fall of 1998. I think this is finishing my 19th year of directing choirs at Concordia.
Wow. Was choral directing or music something that you had always wanted to pursue as your career?
Well, no, I was going to be a professional baseball player when I was 10 years old.
Well, there you go.
That didn't pan out because I wasn't very athletic. I always was interested in music, and my parents saw to it that I had piano lessons and was always involved in choirs at church and school. And when I was at Lutheran High North, my choir director, Dean Kratz, kind of inspired me to, consider possibly becoming a high school choir director, and he let me be the student conductor of the choir my senior year in high school. And I thought, okay, well, baseball's not going to work out, so this is probably something I could do. When I went to Concordia, I started studying in music, but I still wasn't really sure that's what I wanted to do. And like a lot of people, it took 4 or 5 years of teaching before I realized that the thing I was doing was the thing I was meant to do and the thing I wanted to do.
Sure. What do you enjoy most about conducting choirs, especially Lutheran choirs?
That's a great question. Well, there's so many facets to it. In terms of a career, it's fantastic because you get to make a lot of decisions on your own. You don't have, a supervisor looking over you and telling you which music to do and how fast to do it and how loud to do it. So you do feel, like you have a lot of autonomy. So that makes it fun on a daily basis to go to work. From the standpoint of relationships, I really, really liked high school. I felt like I was perfectly suited to teach high school students. And I still direct a summer choir of high school kids here from Seward County. And I relate well to high school kids. I'm not sure what that means. But once I got into college, at first it was a little bit of an intimidating thing just because, these kids were older. And as I got older, it stopped being intimidating. And and now I really do like the college age. They're super easy to work with. They're easy to travel with. They're old enough that I don't have to hold their hand and supervise them, and they're young enough that they don't get cranky when everything isn't perfect for them. So it's perfect in that regard. And then mission-wise, the Concordia thing is different than a lot of schools, and Concordia, Nebraska is very intentional about why we exist and what we're ultimately trying to accomplish, and that's preparing servants of Jesus Christ. And so all of our music and all of our effort is, put into that goal that we would use the gifts God gave us and that we would share the gospel message in the most beautiful, artistic, musical way that we possibly can.
Sure. Do you notice the students in the choir taking a more active role in the worship life of the church as they progress through the choir?
That's kind of hard to measure. Since I've been at Concordia, choir members, typically are very involved in the worship life, going to chapels, being a part of Bible studies. I see a lot of them at church on Sundays at St. John across the street. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of them go to other Lutheran churches and other denominations too. So I don't know that I've seen a change in that, but it certainly has been something that, it's pretty clear these students are, that's kind of what a Concordia student is though too. I think it's pretty common.
Sure. So let's talk a bit about the a cappella choir. Who makes up this choir?
These are students from all academic areas at Concordia, all undergraduates. We don't have a graduate program in music yet. So these are all, 17, 18 to 22, 23, occasionally 24 and 25 year olds. And I would say about half of the group on a average year, half the group is comprised of music majors of one kind or another. So we do have a lot of different interests coming into the group. The one thing that is consistent across the board is that these are all very talented, serious studying students who are really interested in singing well and doing a great job with the choir. So that you couldn't tell a music major from a non-major just by looking at who's working the hardest, because the expectation is that they'll all do sectionals, and virtually all of them take voice lessons, and many of them do get some kind of music scholarship as well. But about 50% are either music ed majors, church music majors, they have studying for Bachelor of Arts in Music, or our new music therapy program that we just started last year. So that kind of comprises. We're fortunate at Concordia that it's able to work for athletes to participate in the choir. We have some of the best track runners are in our group. We've got football players, golfers, tennis players. And the rehearsal schedule has always kind of worked out, and the coaches and I have made sure that, we don't bump into each other too much, and so the kids get a nice experience. They're not, just doing one thing while they're at Concordia.
I think that's something that sets Concordia apart from other institutions too, is that students have that opportunity to be able to do multiple things. If you're interested in athletics, if you're interested in choir, you're able to do all of that and be a very well-rounded student while you're at a Concordia.
Well, I know it's true at Concordia Seward, but even at smaller schools, the athletics are just getting so so serious and complete, and so they have a lot of time in training, weightlifting, and all that. And mm-hmm. so it really is unusual that the coaches at Concordia Seward are very supportive of the choir and the band. We've got athletes in the band too, and there have been times when students have missed practices for concerts, and vice versa, rehearsals for athletic contests. So all of us would like to have people only devoted to our one thing, but that the reality is, in my opinion, it's best for the students to get a chance to experience, a wide variety of activities.
Definitely. Yes. So this is a touring choir. What kind of tours does this choir generally go on?
A cappella tours annually in the United States. And usually it's a spring break tour, so we might take one day prior to the spring break week, a Friday, and then the entire week, so 10, 11, 12 days sometimes. And we'll travel. We've been throughout the U.S. In the 19 years I've been there, we've been to Texas and Southern California, the Pacific Northwest, up to North Dakota, out to Michigan and New York. So really, we've covered a lot of areas within the United States. Every 4 years, the choir has taken an international tour. And I believe your husband was on the very first one that I did in 2001. We went to Australia.
Yes, he likes to remind me of that all the time.
I bet he does. It was a terrific, terrific trip. And I had never done international tours before. And I had a woman from Lincoln who approached me and asked me if she could help set up the tour. And this was a gift from God. Her name was Nancy Middendorf. And she and her husband proceeded to basically manage and plan our tours for the better part of 15 years, including 4 international trips. We've been all over Europe. And so we've had pretty extensive traveling every 4 years. Starting in 2 days, we're taking off for South Africa. So that's our next big trip. And we're super excited about that.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And I went on an international tour with the Capella from Concordia Chicago, and that's it's quite an experience. So you're leaving in 2 days. What's going to be comprising this tour? How long are you going to be gone, and where are you going to be going?
Yeah, well, we're going to be, it's a 20-day tour. We leave on the 7th at 2:30 in the morning from Concordia, getting on a bus, traveling to Omaha, which is about an hour and 15 minutes. Then we fly from Omaha to Atlanta, and that's where we'll pick up our flight to Johannesburg. But we have a 12-hour layover in Atlanta. And my mother-in-law happens to live in a suburb of Atlanta out in Marietta, and I asked her if she would be interested in having the choir drop in and doing a quick concert on Sunday afternoon. So she and River Cliff Lutheran Church in Sandy Springs, Georgia, are bringing a bus to the airport. They're going to take us to their church. We're going to have a lunch with their members, and then we're going to have a 2:30 p.m. matinee concert. It'll be our first concert of the South African tour, and then they'll bus us back to the airport, and then we'll get on a plane, and then 16 and a half hours later, we'll be in Johannesburg in South Africa. And we've got about 5 different locations within South Africa, all the major cities. We're going to be doing about 8 or 9 full concerts, I think. And then we've got some school assemblies. And we've also got some educational opportunities where our students are going to break up into groups and serve some of these schools and teach them some things about singing and about music and about music in America. We've got a safari that has been planned for us.
Wow.
We got a variety of different lodging experiences ahead of us. There's some hostels and there's camping, host homes. We're going to be staying with some folks from South Africa. So it should be a nice variety. Our travel guide, our tour guide, is Adam Lee, and he is recently retired from Concordia Irvine. He was in charge of their semester abroad program for many years and has traveled to many, many countries, been to South Africa, I think 5 or 6 times. And he is the one who has set up this tour for us and has just done an amazing job connecting with the Lutheran churches and, you know, kind of paving the way for our arrival next week. So we're super excited about that.
That sounds like an incredible experience for these students. How many of them have been on a tour before? Have any of them traveled internationally before with the choir?
I actually think we have one student in this group that went to Europe last time.
Wow.
And so she's a senior, and it just worked out. Every tour, there's always one or two students who, you know, for whatever reason, took enough time in college that they could hit 2 tours. You also have to make the a cappella choir as a freshman, which is not very easy to do, and she did it. So only one student has traveled internationally with the a cappella choir. The rest are pretty seasoned choir tour kids because they've been on a lot of domestic tours. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of these students, it's the first time they've, you know, flown over an ocean, mm-hmm. into a foreign country. Although that's getting less and less, there's certainly a lot of students that travel internationally now more than when I was in college, that's for sure.
Sure. So this is going to be quite a life-changing experience for these students.
Yeah, I don't think we even know what's in store for us. Mm-hmm. Our Adam Lee told us that, you know, we should be prepared to expect anything. And the key to our success is flexibility. You know, in America, we're used to if the show starts at 7 o'clock and we start at 7:02, somebody's going to complain that, you know, we got started late. And says we can pretty much let go of that in South Africa. And so for a lot of us that tend to be procrastinators anyways, I think we'll fit right well into that that system and that culture. So.
Yeah, that's very true. I know when I went to France, it was the little things that made such a big difference at some of our concerts. Just being able to connect with the audience, even though we were singing in a different language or attempting to sing well in French. you know, just being there and understanding that these people were really receiving the message that we were singing is incredible.
Yeah, the music, I think, that we're going to experience in South Africa, I think, is going to be really diverse, too. We're collaborating with a church choir. I can't remember if it's in Durban or where it is, but they asked if we could learn a Pachelbel double choir piece. And, you know, sure, that's right in our wheelhouse, kind of stuff, you know, that we do. But then some of the other places we're going, it's going to be music that's, you know, very foreign to our ears and more improvisatory. And, you know, we're going to sort of pick it up as we go along. And so we're looking forward to that. We expect to have a fair bit of collaboration. And we're hoping that our concerts will be able to share our music with the folks in attendance. And we've been told that occasionally there might be some people that want to share some of their music with us, too. So it's the sky's the limit. We're open to everything and just hoping to learn and absorb and witness and see what God has in store for us to do.
Sure. So what are a few of the pieces in your repertoire for this tour?
Oh, man. We've got, the thing about the Concordia Seward Choir, since I've been there, because this is a problem that I have, is that I get bored pretty easily, and so there's got to be a lot of variety in the repertoire. Mm-hmm. And so we span all historical eras. We've got some Bach we're going to be doing. We've got some Renaissance music of Vittoria. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing the Omanu Mysterium by Thomas Vittoria, mm-hmm. the Bach Alles was Odem hat from one of his motets. We've got a movement from the Poulenc Gloria called Laudamus Te that we're going to be singing. We have a couple of hymns. We're going to be singing The Church's One Foundation and Holy, 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 and hopefully folks will join in with us on that. One of the really exciting pieces that we're doing is a brand new composition that we just premiered this past spring, and it was written by one of our own choir members, Austin Terrio from Louisiana, and it's a four-movement piece sung in English and Latin, and it's really cool. He did an incredible job, and so we're looking forward to the international premiere of that piece. And we always have a couple of spirituals, Deep River, Battle of Jericho, and then we have some standard pieces that we kind of always have ready to go. Even Solar, Jesus Quickly Come is kind of one of the signature pieces of the a cappella choir. And a couple other different things, but that gives you a good idea.
Sure. Does the choir have a favorite piece, or is it pretty spread?
Yeah, I don't know. That's something. I mean, you get a sense of pieces that, you know, they talk about a lot afterward. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think, you know, since there's so much variety, I think everybody really likes some, and probably everybody doesn't care for some of the other ones. And they're not always the same piece, so you just don't know. And as long as the piece goes well, everybody kind of likes it.
That is very true. That is true. What are you hoping the choir can convey to these audiences in a foreign country?
That's a great question. I hope, my hope is always that during our concerts, people will forget that it's a group of people standing in front of them singing notes on a page, that they'll completely forget that this is, some kind of academic pursuit, and that they'll actually be moved and transported. Sounds a little corny, but we want people to feel our music. We want them to hear very clearly what we're singing, because the words we're singing are critical. And I expect that we'll be singing for a lot of Christian people, but I also know every tour, the Lord has a way of putting unbelievers or people that are struggling with their faith, actually, like we all are, day to day. Even the students in the choir need to hear the words that they're singing and be strengthened by it. So I guess I certainly hope that they're impressed with the musical art. I want it to be, I always want our choirs to be outstanding. I want people to, you know, at the end of the concert, feel like they've been entertained, educated, but most importantly, I think inspired and strengthened in their faith. I guess that's what I'm hoping. It's a lot. I'm hoping for a lot of things.
High standards.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. That's all right. On previous tours, how have you seen the students changing or feeling or acting differently from the beginning to the end on these international tours that are so life-changing? How have the students changed?
That is surprisingly obvious. You know, these kids are super transparent. And, you know, as we get older, we get a little cautious. But they'll just come right up to me and they'll just say, I had no idea this would be like this. I had no idea people would respond this way. Or could you believe this happened? And just listening to them talk amongst themselves too, you know, it's just so eye-opening. We're so, you know, inwardly focused here in our country. And you know, the rest of the world learns English so that they can, you know, communicate with us. Most of my students know one language, and so it really is, I think it's more, I think it's surprising to them how much different it is. And one of the things that I always see at first students do is they kind of feel like, oh, they don't do this as well as we do in America. You know, we know how to do this here, and they don't do it that way, therefore their way must be lesser. And you realize pretty quickly there's a reason people do what they do and why they do it. And so if it's a little different pace, or you don't get free refills on your pop, maybe there's a good reason for that. And you know, I think there's a temptation to think arrogantly, why don't they do it the way we do? And that gets broken down pretty quickly on these tours, and kids start to realize better what it means to be selfless, what it means to be understanding and flexible. I mean, that's an important thing for all of us, to, you know, just not be so darn sure that we know everything and that everything we do is best.
That is very true. And we're actually all out of time. So Dr. Van Campen, it's been an honor having you on our program and a pleasure speaking with you, and God's blessings on your tour next week.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Coming up after the break, another exciting missionary story. Stay tuned for that. You're listening to Faith and Family on KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Pro-lifers have passed state legislation ending abortion after 5 months because the baby experiences agonizing pain. Of course, the abortion industry and their fellow activists oppose the bills, claiming babies this age can't feel pain. New research indicates the preborn can feel pain before the end of 3 months. Building a three-dimensional cellular map, scientists found the babies had adult-like patterns of nerve development in the skin before the end of the first trimester. Other research has long shown babies respond to touch at only 8 weeks. This isn't the wishful ramblings of a pro-lifer. This is state-of-the-art medical science. But abortion activists have long been flat-earth deniers of medical facts in order to push abortion on demand throughout pregnancy.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
One easy way to share the hope and comfort we have in Christ is through liturgical cards and art. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts provides that assurance as each card contains a Bible verse meant to bring comfort to the receiver. The cards can be used throughout the year. Agnus Dei Arts selection of reproductions are also perfect for your home, your pastor, seminary students, or confirmation. AgnusDeiArts.com. That's AgnusDei Arts.com.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
This week on the Lutheran Hour, Pastor Gregory Seltz looks at three ways we wander away from God's abundant grace. He shows how Jesus is the good shepherd who puts himself into our story in order to bring us back once again. We'll also discuss your place in God's plan and how God is with us today. That's all this week on the Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
Think fast. In the short time it takes to listen to this message, a small flame can turn into a big fire. Several minutes more, and thick, poisonous smoke may have filled your lungs and reduced your ability to respond. Give it 5, and your entire home may be filled with flames.
Keep breathing. We've got you.
Don't let your world go up in smoke. Have working smoke alarms and practice an escape plan for you and your loved ones. Learn more at usfa.fema.gov, because fire is everyone's fight.
You listen to Worldwide KFUO often. You try not to miss your favorite program because you benefit from the gospel message proclaimed. But have you shared KFUO with your friends and family? It's easy to do. Just like us on Facebook at facebook.com/KFUO radio and share us. You can email your friends or family an audio link of one of your favorite programs and let them hear for themselves. Share KFUO and help spread the gospel to the world. That's the good news in the messenger of good news. Worldwide KFUO.
Listening to Faith and Family, I'm Sarah Golseth. I really enjoy bringing you stories from our missionaries and letting them share their experiences with you in their own words. With me in studio today is the Fritchie family, Reverend Joel and Clarion, and their three boys, and they serve the Lord in the Dominican Republic. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Let's start with some introductions. One of you would like to introduce the crew here?
All right. I'm Pastor Joel Fritchie. I serve as a church planter in the Dominican Republic and also director of our new Dominican seminary in Palmar, Arriba, serving Latin America. And my wife, Clarion.
Hello.
Clarion is the rock of our family and keeps us all together here. Keep us as a fine family unit. We have our oldest son here, Victor. You want to say hi?
Yep.
Hello.
And Sergey, or as he's known in the Dominican, Sergio.
Hi.
And last but not least, Andre.
The little person on the up. Hi.
That's wonderful. So tell me a bit about your family, your background, and what led to the mission field.
You want me to take it? All right. I have been serving as a pastor in the LCMS since 2000. And Clarity and I were married in 2003 when we were both serving in Houston, Texas. I was a pastor and she was a Lutheran school teacher. And we got on the road to adopt children. So we've been through an adoption journey. I think we've been on the program and talked about that before.
Yeah, probably.
Victor, Sergey, and Andre are all adopted from Russia. And I think it was part of that experience that moved us, influenced us to consider doing mission work overseas someday. And just a few years ago, when the Synod was putting out before everybody the need for more missionaries in the field, we talked about it, prayed about it, and inquired about it. And not too long after that, we found ourselves on the trek toward missionary journey in Latin America.
Sure. And so serving in the mission field wasn't something that had been a long, long time coming, but it was something that you had been considering for some period of time before actually going.
Yeah, I mean, I had showed a little bit of interest in it when I was a seminary student. I actually came over to here to the IC for a mission conference once, but just decided at the time that I think traditional parish ministry was where the Lord was sending me. But I did have it kind of in the back of my head, you know, the desire to maybe look into it someday. And I kind of thought to myself a few years ago when we started considering it, you know, maybe now's the best time before I get 10 years older and, you know, it's a little more difficult to learn another language and
sure.
The boys are older. It was just a good time for us in 2014 when I accepted the call to serve.
Sure. So you're in the Dominican Republic now. And how long have you been there?
We've been in the Dominican since February of 2015, so just a little over 2 years now.
Okay, and you are in the capital city there, is that right?
Yes, we live and work in Santo Domingo, the capital city of about 4 million or so people. Busy city.
Sure. So tell me what it's like living there and the first time you all were in the Dominican Republic as a family.
Well, the first time we were in the Dominican Republic as a family, we were in Santiago, and we actually went through an orientation of sorts to kind of help us acclimate to the Dominican, which is really neat. It is a different culture, louder, messier, dirtier, but a wonderful culture, and the people are very, very loving and caring. So we went from Santiago to Santo Domingo. And our first experiences were trying to set up home, you know, because you go to the field with basically the clothes in your suitcases.
Sure.
And so there's, you know, where are we going to sleep? Where are we going to sit? Where are we going to eat? So you set up your home. There were lots of trips to IKEA and things like that. So all of that is getting to know. I mean, it's Santo Domingo is largely like any other urban area.
Sure.
It's got all its restaurants, stores, things like that. But there is an element of... There's a difference as far as the culture goes and as far as economic levels go, too.
Sure. Did it take a long time to kind of adapt to everything?
We're still adapting.
I would say it. The first year was certainly the hardest. You know, it's a new language, new culture. You struggle with things that you don't necessarily struggle with here. Electricity goes out quite often, you know, for a few hours at a time. For drinking water, you have to get bottled water. And just all the things you have to do seem to take, you know, twice as long as they would here, maybe sometimes even longer.
Laundry.
What is it like doing the laundry?
Yeah.
Well, it just takes a whole lot longer because there are no dryers. And if it happens to be a couple rainy days, you're in trouble because you got to get those clothes dry.
Yeah, sure. It's very different things to think about when you're keeping a house.
Yeah.
I think once we got past that first year, got over that hump, things got easier, maybe. But I guess we got more acclimated and used to how things work. And in that sense, it was easier. And then I think the second year was the time to really progress with the language. Mm-hmm. So I think Claire and I both agree now that after 2 years on the field, while neither one of us are fluent in the language, we feel a lot more comfortable, and I'm understanding a whole lot more than I did when we arrived. So that second year was critical for that, I think.
Yeah. When you arrive in a new city, especially when you don't speak the language, it can be terrifying to do mm-hmm. everyday things. Going to the store, when you're going to check out, the person is rambling off Spanish, and you say, wait, I don't know what you're saying.
Sure.
Ordering pizza, you know, we gave ourselves high fives when we actually got a pizza to our house because you can't understand what they're saying over the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, the comfort level with all of that has gone up because giving yourself time to learn the language and to acclimate to the language is huge.
Yeah.
The better you learn the language, the more patient you are with yourself learning the language, the happier you're going to, a missionary will be in their field of service.
Sure. What was it like for the kids learning the language? Was it easier or harder for them?
Well, it depends on which kid you're talking to. Our two youngest, they are very talkative, very social. And mm-hmm. so they didn't have much trouble getting conversational Spanish down. And they were enrolled in a bilingual school, so they were having English and Spanish classes during the day. Our oldest is a little more quiet, and mm-hmm. so consequently, learning the language is a little more of a struggle for him.
Sure.
But we're very proud of all three of them. They've done very well with acclimating to a new culture and trying to learn a new language.
I was really proud of Sergei. One day, we were all up at the church for youth group, which we do every Saturday, mm-hmm. and we sometimes ask one of the youth to say the closing prayer for the day. And so Sergei volunteered. This was only after about a year in country. And Sergei raised his hand. He's always eager to read Bible readings or do a prayer. And he did his prayer all in Spanish. He had some pauses throughout, you know, to think about what he was going to say and how he was going to say it. But I guess that was the moment where I was really blown away and realized, wow, this young man could speak some Spanish.
It's really fun to hear them, too, on the playground with Dominican kids when we go to some of the parks in Santo Domingo. That's a really special thing to hear and see.
Sure, sure. What are the parks like there?
they're not as well-kept as the parks here in the United States, or some of the parks. But they're nice and a space for the kids to run around. They've got slides and monkey bars and
usual.
Your regular park
playground
stuff.
Equipment's probably a little bit older, you know, and shows its age and things like that, but... you know, these guys can still run around, let off their energy, practice their parkour moves. I had to say that,
nice.
Andre. And they have a good time, so it's really nice.
All right, so speaking of the kids, mm-hmm. it's time for them to tell us what their favorite thing is about the Dominican Republic.
All right, we're going to start with Andre here.
All right, Andre.
What did you say?
What is your favorite thing about living in the Dominican Republic?
That we can... move around.
Move around.
And eat a lot of different food.
Oh.
Like in the Dominican.
Okay. Awesome.
What kind of food? What's your favorite food?
Pica pollo, which is fried chicken and salami.
Ooh. Okay. All right. Who's next?
Sergei.
Sergei. What's your favorite thing about living in the Dominican Republic?
My favorite thing about living in the Dominican Republic is always... eating.
Always?
Yes.
What's your favorite thing to eat?
Usually sancocho, which is like chicken with yuca,
mm-hmm.
Plantains in a like a bowl of soup.
Sometimes what might you find in sancocho?
A pickle.
No, well, yeah, that, but what something
chicken
really
feet.
Different. There you go. Chicken feet.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
What place do you like
to visit in the Dominican? Actually, the places I like to see are I really like the resorts. I didn't think that the resorts would be so high class.
Yeah.
I like the beaches a lot.
Yeah, are they really nice to go to?
Yes. And you can go to many historical sites, such as the Faro a Colón and the, which is the Columbus Lighthouse, where the Dominicans say Columbus was buried.
Oh, that's
also,
really cool.
You can go to the Colonial Zone and see his brother's house, La Casa de Diego,
mm-hmm.
Or you could see the first Roman Catholic church.
Wow. Is it really old and really big?
It's really old.
And beautiful?
breaking apart.
Your parents
apart.
Say yes. Right.
I don't know.
I think it's Victor's turn.
All right, Victor, your turn.
What I really enjoy in the Dominican Republic is the culture and how everybody is so friendly and open-handed.
Wonderful. So what kinds of things do you all get to discover or explore? I know the kids mentioned the historical sites, the cultural things. Are there other things that you guys like to do when you have maybe a few minutes of your free time?
Well, there are quite a few places that we can visit in the Dominican Republic. One of the places we like to take visitors is to Los Tres Ojos, mm-hmm. which is a cave that has three beautiful clear lakes in it mm-hmm. and lots of steps and exploring, so it's kind of a fun place to visit. We do live in a large city, so as far as open areas, there's not a whole lot of that. But the Colonial Zone is a huge attraction that we have down in Santo Domingo. It has a lot of early colonial architecture, things, as Sergey said, like Diego Colón's house, mm-hmm. The first cathedral in the Americas, and just things like that.
Sure.
It's really nice to go down to, like, the historic Colonial Zone. There are a lot of sidewalk cafes where you can sit and have a coffee, read a book, things like that. It's just a really nice place to just kind of park and enjoy the history and culture around you and things like that. So we frequent that place quite often.
Yeah, and Victor mentioned that the people were very nice and open and welcoming. Is that something that you find most anywhere in the DR?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It doesn't matter really your socioeconomic level. Mm-hmm. The Dominicans will have white plastic chairs that they will pull out when they have visitors.
Yeah, a small cup of coffee.
And you can sit and visit, and that's kind of what you do. You don't go and visit someone without sitting down and talking with them. If you don't sit down, it's not a true visit.
Yeah, so we get to do that quite often. We'll go with some of our Dominican colleagues or Dominican friends and do visits. And most people are ready and willing to open their door and invite you in and pretty much roll out the red carpet. It's wonderful.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about the work that you're doing, the reason why you're down there.
Yeah.
Pastor, tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing planting churches and actually doing the mission work.
Okay. Yeah, I'm called as a church planter. Our family is the first family, missionary family, to live in Santo Domingo, at least from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Mm-hmm. The majority of our missionaries have lived and worked primarily in the northern part of the island. But missionaries did commute down to Santo Domingo and do evangelism and catechesis and such. A church was planted early on in the early stages of the mission just outside of Santo Domingo in Las Americas. It's the only church that has a Dominican Lutheran national pastor. Mm-hmm. So I serve alongside him, supporting him in his ministry, assisting him in preaching and visiting and all the tasks that a pastor does. The past year or so, we've been working really hard to bring some organization and structure into the congregation, teach a lot of stewardship to help this young church plant congregation know how to support its pastor in the way that the Lord would have us do that. So I serve primarily there, but we've also got a small church plant in another part of Santo Domingo where we have gathered together a few folks who were catechized over the years and now are starting in-home Bible studies, reaching out into the community, meeting more people, sharing God's word with them, just trying to gather people in around God's word and around the sacraments. So that's the primary duties is meeting people, sharing God's word with them, doing Bible study, and just gathering them around God's word and sacraments so they can be nurtured and fed and strengthened and ready to be Christ's witnesses in their daily vocations.
Sure. What is the worship like in these churches?
Well, it's, structurally, we use a common liturgy, like many of our congregations here in the States use. Mm-hmm. Same parts of the service, just in Spanish, and the instrumentation is different. We don't have organs down in the Dominican. We have electronic keyboards and guitars primarily. So we sing the liturgy. We sing the Kyrie, the Gloria, the Agnus Dei, you know, and all those things, but we sing them in Spanish.
En español.
And oftentimes, you know, we gather for worship. Church is at 9:30 on Sundays at our Las Americas congregation. But, you know, due to cultural things, often it starts about 10:15, you know. But as the people begin to hear the singing and things happening, they make their way over. But the central focus is the same, Christ. Christ being proclaimed and delivered to his people. And we do make use of the liturgy. And we're excited because a new Spanish hymnal is in the works.
Oh, wow.
That we hope to be released in the near future. So that'll assist us in our worship tremendously, open up our repertoire of songs and hymns and things like that. So we're really excited about that.
That does sound very exciting to have that aid in worship. Let's talk a little bit about the seminary. There's a new seminary in the works.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. As we look at kind of our mission priorities or the priorities of the Office of International Mission of the Synod, the first is to plant, sustain, and revitalize congregations. The second is support and expand theological education. So as we plant churches, we want to provide pastors to shepherd those churches or pastors to plant more churches. And as we missionaries are not going to be around forever, it would be wonderful to have Dominicans themselves serve in those roles, especially since it's their culture, their language, and that. The goal is to raise up pastors and deaconesses for service in the Dominican. So early on in the strategic plan, we had a seminary in the plan, and it's all now starting to come to fruition by God's grace. So the location was always planned to be in Palmar Arriba, where we have Concordia Lutheran Church and School, where we have our group home that serves the developmentally disabled. And we recently just added a third level onto the school building, and that will be our seminary classroom building, offices, Deaconess Mercy Center. So we're really, really excited about that. We have four professors, Pastor David Preuss, Pastor Sergio Maita, Pastor Sergio Fritzler, and myself, who will be teaching classes. So we're now in the process of finalizing curriculum and all of the details that are necessary to house single students, married students, all those kinds of things. And Lord willing, by his grace, in August of 2017, this year, we will welcome 14 students from all around Latin America to our campus and begin classes.
That's amazing, really. And how important is this seminary to really sustaining the church's work in the Dominican Republic and in Latin America in general?
We've found that in the history of missions in Latin America, what has really been a blessing is to start a seminary early on in the mission work to provide pastors for the church plants and pastors to plant new churches. In countries where we've worked for years, done missionary work for years, and there was no seminary, some of them haven't ordained a new pastor for over 15 years. And so we don't want to get ourselves into that position where missionaries are continually serving, but we have no national pastors to fill the pulpits. So we pray that this seminary will be a blessing not only to the Dominican as we raise up pastors for the church plants there, but through Latin America as well. We're working with our partner churches, with our other missions in different countries like Peru, with our missionary personnel there, always looking for men who are willing and able to serve as pastors, who have the aptitude and qualifications that our Lord gives us in the scriptures to serve. And I think it's going to have a huge impact to to provide pastors for all of our church plants to kind of standardize the process for ordination and all those kinds of things. It's really exciting.
That's great. And do you have instruction or programs for some younger adults, younger men who are interested in the seminary but aren't quite there yet?
Yeah, even though, you know, we haven't had the doors of the seminary open yet, we've already been on the lookout for, you know, candidates for the ministry. So we've been working with a pre-seminary program for a number of years now, and that involves just looking at those young men in our congregation who missionaries and other national pastors in the field feel may make a good pastor someday. Some of them may become pastors, some of them don't. Personally, every month I take a group of six or seven young men from our congregation in Las Americas in Santo Domingo, and they ride with me about 2.5 hours north to the seminary location, and we have a Bible study on a Friday night for about 2 hours with other pastors, missionary pastors, and young men from the area up and around Santiago. And we do like a two-hour Bible study, we have a fellowship meal together, and then us guys from the Capitol, we spend the night there, and the boys play some basketball in the morning, and then we drive back to the Capitol later in the morning. And it's just a great opportunity for these boys to be encouraged, to see the seminary site, to kind of get out of their neighborhood and see the larger country around them. And I think it gets them really excited about the potential future of serving. And I would say out of those six or seven that accompany me up to that study, I have two really solid candidates for the ministry that I'm quite certain are going to become pastors someday. So really, really neat thing.
That's wonderful. Just a few minutes left. What are your hopes, your dreams for the Lutheran Church in the Dominican Republic?
Well, we do hope eventually to have a self-sustaining confessional Lutheran church body there. It's still a young church plant. Missions, at least on behalf of our church, have been going on for a little over 10 years now. We have 5 mission plants, but our goal would be to, have a self-sustaining confessional Lutheran church body, continue planting churches, schools. Lutheran education is a priority as well, and a vibrant mercy ministry alongside Word and Sacrament. One of the neat things to see, just to go back to that topic of mission work around Latin America, some of the older missions where we've worked for 50, 60, 70 years in Latin America, nowadays those guys are sending missionaries out to Africa and out to other places. So that's a great sign of a mature church body when they themselves then are sending missionaries abroad to preach the gospel. If the Lord can bless us in that way in the Dominican, I don't know how many years from now that would be, but what an awesome thing that would be.
That is great. Clarion, any advice or thoughts for families who are thinking about mission work?
My advice would be to consider it and to be patient as you consider it and to be flexible and to take joy in the blessings that you are given every day, because we all know there's going to be several disappointments. Mm-hmm. And so when you really count your blessings and realize how richly you are blessed, then that helps you to accomplish and to be open to the plans that the Lord has for you.
Sure. My guests in studio today, the Fritchie family, Reverend Joel and Clarion and their boys. Pastor, thank you for being my guest today.
Hey, thank you.
Clarion,
great to have the opportunity.
Clarion, thank you so much.
Thanks, our pleasure.
And Victor and Sergey and Andre, thank you for being my guests today.
You're welcome.
Read more about the Fritchies and the missionary work in the Dominican Republic at lcms.org/Fritchie. And to learn about how you can serve as a missionary, you can go to lcms.org/service.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.